Welcome to the Movies in the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week of the world of genre movie news. We would both like to personally thank the Michelin Man for not sponsoring this week's episode of the Movies in the Brain podcast. Sorry about that little technical glitch on tagging on Twitter. But thank all of you for joining us, and thank all of you for sticking around. I know that we had a month hiatus there as far as actually posting episodes. But our technical difficulties have been resolved, and I hope that you will be ecstatic to know that. So, Chad, this week, kind of lighter on movie news than the almost 2 hours we spent last week.
Yeah, you would expect that after just the dump of information that is Comic-Con.
Well, we do know that James Gunn continued to do some talking about Guardians after the panels were over. What did you think of his position that revealing the planet-sized reveal that is Peter Quill's father was not really a spoiler?
I read his comments, and The very first thing he said in those comments is, "If it's up to me, I wouldn't show y'all anything. Y'all would just go.
Wouldn't tell you about Mantis.
I wouldn't tell you Mantis. I wouldn't tell you Kurt Russell's in the movie. I wouldn't tell you any of this stuff. You just go into the movie and see it. But we have to market the movie, and the way this movie is structured, there's no way we can market it without showing you Ego. So, in that regard, it's not a spoiler because it's core to the story of the movie. And saying it like that, I'm fine with it, because that means there's other things that we don't know, and we're just trying to wait to see the movie. But they can't show us anything because they'd have to show us Ego. So they were kind of, I'm sure he would have loved to not tell us, because he's been lying to us for the past year anyway.
Well, I mean, he said that on the press day set visit that they did, they had Jason on on Kurt Russell's chair, and they had concept art with depicting him as Jason. So, like, they went to almost J.J. Abrams con-like extremes to kind of keep this under wraps for as long as they could.
Yeah, so So I'm good with it.
We still aren't going to see a trailer till Doctor Strange in November anyway.
That's what it looks like. There is a chance that they'll show it. I think New York Comic Con comes up before that, but it's like the second
week of October or something like that.
So maybe there, but yeah, probably Doctor Strange, which is fine. Guardians is
or on Kimmel.
That dude, I get that it's ABC. But he got Batman vs. Superman trailer. He's on ABC, and this is Warner Brothers. But so I don't know who Kimmel likes or likes him. But keep it off Kimmel, just off of principle. But Guardians, amazingly enough, is a brand enough all on its own to not have to have a trailer. They could not do a trailer until next year if they wanted to, which is amazing to say when nobody knew. I read comics, and I didn't really know who any of the Guardians was before they announced the first movie. And now, we're, 2 years removed, and everybody knows Guardians, and they could not do anything and roll into a movie and make over $100 million.
Because of Baby Groot.
The scene they showed at Comic-Con with Baby Groot and Rocket and Yondu trying to escape, the more I hear it described, the more I want to see that, and I want to see it right now. And everybody has said it. Again, I'm going to say it again. That scene, they saw it, and they were like, Baby Groot's making all the money. And just hearing them talk about it, it's like, I want to give you Baby Groot money now. I have no idea what he's going to do. I don't know what he's going to sound like. I don't know what he looks like. But I want to give you Baby Groot money now. So, this movie is going to be... Everything about this movie is going to be a monster. It just has to be good, and I think we'll get that.
Well, I mean, it is amazing to me to think that we are going to live in a world in which Marvel is making money off of a talking raccoon, a sentient plant being, and a living planet.
With Fu Manchu.
Which they kept intact. I don't know if they made him purple, but I heard they kept the Fu Manchu intact.
Yeah, he was walking, Kurt Russell was walking around with his big grizzly beard at one point, so I'm assuming it's some, that's fashioned into it some sort of way.
Well, I mean, we haven't seen the design of the planet yet. We've seen him in human form, and we're aware that he has male appendages, but we don't, we have not seen the Ego part of Ego, the Living Planet.
Yeah, along with Baby Groot, that's probably the most interesting thing, how they're going to explain it and how we're going to actually see Ego, because again, going by the scene that they showed and the conversation between Drax and Ego, we can assume that when we meet Ego, he's in full Ego mode. To warrant the question that Drax asked him.
Indeed. Which, again, is just like... We've had that conversation about Peter Quill and the Milano just, like, using the microphone to, like, talk to this living planet.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes the most sense, but the way they talked about it is, like, he's, like, looking at Drax talking. So, in my mind, it's like, he's, like, I mean, I guess he could see in the ship. He is a planet. I don't know what a planet's vision is like. So I'm guessing he could look
well,
in the ship and
Ego
see.
Well, Ego did have eyes in the drawing that we saw.
Yeah, so, I mean, who's to say that he can't look into a ship and pinpoint the person that's talking to him? But it just seems like they would just be on, like, out in the open being able to speak, which makes no sense at all. But at this point, we're talking about a talking planet, so...
Well, the idea is basically an impersonage... The idea is basically that he is a energy beam, right? That he is a being of great power and energy, so he can basically give himself human, transform, take a part of himself and implant himself in a human form.
Yes.
So that he can traverse the galaxy.
Yeah, I think that'll be the way they go with it.
I think that the way I've heard it described is kind of, you know, there's the Father and there's the Son and there's the Holy Spirit. Like, it's all three of the same being, but they're three different personages. So, like, maybe that there is a Kurt Russell and there's also the living planet.
That's an interesting way to put it. So, yeah, that works. Now I just want to see it. I'm just wanting to see everything about this.
So. You're also wanting to see Sylvester Stallone?
Yeah, they clearly show in the trailer, and it seems like he's Nova, part of Nova Corps.
Which gives rise to most of the fan theories that have been floating around on the internet for a while.
Yeah. So, if he's in here, yeah, he has to have a scene with Kurt Russell, just so we can make a Tango and Cash joke.
And still no signs of Adam Warlock anywhere?
No. I mean, I guess they can go put him somewhere in here, but I don't really see why... I don't really think they will. It seems like if they did now, it'd only be like fan service and the potential of him showing up in Infinity War, which I don't know if you actually need that.
Well, I think that that's, to me, that would be a perfect thing for a Guardians of the Galaxy 3 coming in summer 2020.
Yeah, that would be about that time, yeah.
Like, you've passed this... Like, I've assumed for a while that two of the three 2020 movies would be a Spider-Man sequel and a Guardian sequel, because those are both just right about the right time to do those.
Yeah.
And as you've pointed out on this podcast many times, Marvel would get, like, three bites of the Spider-Man apple while Sony would only get one. Four. So it would be time for Sony to get theirs again. You know, I just, like, it's interesting to me what they're doing with Guardians. I'm interested to see how things go and how that footage goes over. I think it's going to go over really successfully. Gunn has been very open about what he's doing. But I'm just excited to see a living planet, man. Like, give me all the Ego of the Living Planet, like, pillows and, like, action figures and, like, pop vinyls and... everything. Like, give me the Ego of the Living Planet. Make him purple, give him the little ridges on the top to indicate volcanoes, and, like, you know, have Alter Ego played by Danny DeVito.
You're still trying to get Ultra Ego in there.
Yes. Well, maybe for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, we can have Ultra Ego, uncle.
I mean, I would say they're going in, increments. And what the amount of ridiculousness that we think we can handle, and they give us a little bit more, and we accept it. But, I mean, yeah, they gave us the raccoon and the tree. But taking that leap to, like, these two little sentient beings, and now we're going to a big leap. Not only that, this is a planet. This is a planet that is the father of your lead character.
And also has a brother.
See, and that's what is, like... I mean, well, hell, why not? At this point, why not? You just jumped over, like, 5 increments to get to the planet.
Yeah, couldn't get to Adam Warlock. We just had to jump directly.
Yeah, we just go straight to Ego. So, yeah, why not? Just whatever. Just do whatever ridiculous stuff you want. Because it seems to work for you.
So, the director of Thor 3 dropped a nice little childlike drawing on the world a couple of days ago on his Instagram to let us all know that Thor is chasing the purple guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did see that. That was fun. That I'm assuming Thor drew it. And it looks like what you would imagine a 5-year-old would draw if they heard, hey, there's this purple guy with all this power that wants this glove with these gems on it. And we don't know anything about him. So he just draws a purple guy with the glove with gems on it, and he has questions.
And has a sticky note next to it that says, what do we know?
He's purple. He doesn't like to stand much. And I forget, what's the last one? I forget what the last one was. But it's all very amusing. And it plays into the clip they showed at Comic-Con that I hope we get to see one day, which was...
what Thor was doing during Civil War.
Yeah, he was in Australia. He moved in with some guy, and he's waiting on Tony Stark to call him or something like that. And it was just this...
Sounds like a perfect one-shot, actually.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything. It's just them having fun, and it sounds like a lot of fun.
Thor playing Connect Four.
I didn't know he played Connect Four. It just sounded like it played up the whole, Thor's a blonde, so he's a dumb blonde element. I really wish they'd release that like now, but probably won't see it till like a Blu-ray. But this feeds into that, so we know that they can have fun. Now it's just a matter of seeing, can they pull off the Hulk smash stuff and his War Hulk stuff and
this big sprawling epic. You noticed somebody called it, I think it was Frosty, referred to it as Planet Hulk. In front of Feige, and Feige was like, nope, Thor Ragnarok.
No, I didn't see that. I started to watch the interview with Frosty and Feige today.
Yeah, it's 8 minutes. It's a quality interview.
It must have been
that. And one day we will attain our own interview, which will be an hour in length, and will contain many questions for you, Mr. Feige. So get ready, be prepared to grant us that time, as the great people of Great Britain... have question time with their prime minister. One could argue that Kevin Feige is the prime minister of nerds and must now be questioned.
I will say that's accurate. But aren't the people of Britain, like, upset with their prime minister?
He just resigned and they just put a female in charge.
Yeah. Feige's not quite net boat.
Nope. He is not hated or has any ill will toward him at all. He's just never gives interviews that are longer than 8 minutes. And it has some questions that need to be answered, mainly about, like, oh, I don't know, where's Red Skull? Oh, I don't know, what happened to Betty Ross? Like, did Bruce Banner just, like, forget about her while he was crushing on Black Widow, or how did that happen? Did, like, Betty Ross, like, look at the news at any point when the Avengers were having the Battle of New York and go, hey, that guy looks familiar?
Thunderbolt locked her in the room a long time ago.
What were some of the other ones that I had? Where was Natalie Portman during the events of Age of Ultron? Where was she accepting this Nobel Prize that she was getting, and why didn't we see it? When exactly did Pepper Potts' breakup with Tony Stark happen, and why did we not see it, and why did the beloved Russo brothers decide that it wasn't vitally necessary for us to see Pepper Potts in Civil War, especially when Rhodey, like, is paralyzed for the rest of his life, and that's her friend, too.
You've got to let the Pepper thing go.
I will let the Pepper thing go when Infinity War shows up and she's like, Rescue.
I mean, I guess we'll see her again.
I would hope. I mean, I understand contractual obligations, but, like, she's his heart and soul, and you ripped him, you ripped her away and gave him no validation at the end. You just left him a defeated, broken man. With a cell phone that said, call me maybe.
You know you're going to get another comment about the Pepper Rant.
I know, I'm aware, but, like, there are serious questions that Feige needs to answer. Why did you decide to go with Ego the Living Planet? Was it a difficult decision for you to decide to let James Gunn do one of the craziest things that's ever been done in a comic book movie before? Hey, how difficult was it to get the Sony deal done?
Like that I want to know.
Like, how difficult was it for you to get the Sony deal done? How many, what are the exact terms? How long is the deal for? Is it for 3 movies? Is it for 2 standalone appearances and 3 movies? You know, how is the financial split? How much of the marketing costs does Sony pick up for the movie? Or do y'all pick up all of the marketing costs with the Disney marketing machine for Homecoming? Y'all haven't made a good Thor movie yet. Like, how do you make a great Thor movie in this world and put all this importance on him? How did you decide to do World War Hulk? Like, how did you decide the technology was there for that to happen? How did you get Michael Keaton to decide that he was going to play Vulture? Like, how much money did you have to throw at him?
Yes, because he turned you down at one point, and you went back, and he said yes. So what changed?
And, like, there are so many, like, okay, what was it like in the desert, in the deserts out there when you were, like, it was you and Favreau and Downey, and y'all were just making this thing up as you go on the set of the first Iron Man movie, and here we are 8 years later, and you're doing a living planet. Like, how did y'all keep that thing cohesive enough to actually become one of the greatest comic book movies ever made? Why did you run Joss Whedon into the ground? Like, why was Thor taking a bath so important that it had to, that Hawkeye's little farmhouse had to be held hostage? What happened with Edgar Wright? Like, was it simply a matter of Edgar didn't want to reference other films and y'all thought that there needed to be connective tissue? Was it the tone of the movie and the tone of the script that that Cornish had that wasn't to the liking of the creative committee? How much communication was there between the creative committee and Edgar Wright? How many drafts did they go through? What were the major differences between what became Peyton Reed and became Paul Rudd in Peyton Reed's movie? And what was Edgar Wright's Ant-Man? You know, how did those conversations go? Whose corner were you in? Why did you decide to have Ant-Man be the main protagonist when clearly Evangeline Lilly's character is more qualified to do the job than Scott Lang? How did you come to the decision? What were the problems with you and Edward Norton? Like, there was a lot of contention on that set of Incredible Hulk. At that time, you really didn't understand that you were making an interconnected universe, so that pressure wasn't there. But what were the creative tensions between star and director and studio that were causing so much friction? How many restrictions did you put on Alan Taylor? Like, Alan Taylor was really not happy on that press tour for Thor: The Dark World. And really the only scenes in that entire movie that ring true of his direction are the funeral scenes. So what limitations did you put on him? Why did the other director back out over creative differences? It
was Patty Jenkins.
Right. And how did your meeting with Ava go? Like, why did Ava not want to jump on board your Black Panther when that seems like a material that would be very much something she could pull off very well, considering what she just got finished doing with Selma? You know, did you have any concern about hiring Michael B. Jordan with his contractual issues with Fox? What is your problem with Fox, considering the fact that you worked with Singer on the original X-Men movies, and that helped get you your start as a producer? These are all questions that Mr. Feige needs to answer at some point.
Yes, but...
You can't get all those questions into 8 minutes, and he talks answers around.
No, but I know he will, like, talk around some of those, but there are some of those that I legitimately, like, want to be like, look, just off the record, I just want to know. I'm not going to tell anybody. There's nothing recorded. I just want to know. Because some of those are very good that I just know he'd be like, hell no. In his polite, Feige way, he would answer it, and it would basically be like, hell no, I'm not telling you anything of substance.
Which is why he would then hire me to write the book, which would then go on sale and do many millions of copies from nerd boys who want to know the answers to these questions.
I hope you get to write the book, because whoever gets to write the book gets to hear the answers to those questions, even though they're probably never put in the book.
I mean, that's just the list I can come up with off the top of my head.
I think you should open with the Pepper question, just to catch him off his game and be like, "What?" And then
you go ahead, ask me anything in the world. It's like the when the genie pops up in Aladdin for the first time. Like, any wish that you would like. Okay, tell me why Pepper Potts was not in Civil War. What?
No, you can't say it like that. You gotta say it like you just said it. Like, just pile it all onto me, and so he can be like, "What? Wait." I had to drop my game face for a moment because I didn't know what was going on. But the generic answer is, and he will proceed to go. But catch him off the game first.
Why did you not, why did negotiations with Joaquin Phoenix break down? Was it really over previs and the amount of work that he was going to have to do there? Or was it because he was uncomfortable doing a large-scale press junket the way that he was going to have to do for a movie like that? Like, those are all kinds of questions that, like, the best way I can equate it to is, like, when we were all kids, we didn't know the expanded universe history of Star Wars. All we knew is that shocking revelation of, like, I am your father. And then it was like, you know, then it became about, well, how did Darth Vader end up in that suit? How did Anakin Skywalker fall from grace? And so we all sat around talking and had ideas and theories. And of course, the universe, extended universe, and Lucas himself had put the Mustafar stuff out there in the expanded universe canon. But like, those conversations were always had. It's the same way here. Like, people who love these Marvel movies have these questions and they have these conversations. Well, you know, give us the answers. And getting question time with Mr. Feige would be, as a matter of fact, I think that's going to be the title of the episode if it ever happens. Question time with Mr. Feige. Should be interesting. And I'd like to ask him, you know, legitimately, did you root for the Fantastic Four movie to fail? Like, were you just secretly hoping that it would fall on its face so you wouldn't have to answer questions about it? I mean, there's all kinds of things that never get asked on a press junket that need to be answered.
I agree. We're going to try it.
And we need to start with Pepper Potts. So, speaking of Marvel, they want to do more Spider-Man movies, and there's potential you could go year to year. Although Feige, in the interview that I saw him do, where that quote came from, was kind of just like, well, you know, we were kind of in a position where we thought that might be a model to follow. Not like we're going to do it that way, but like, it was the model. It's a possibility. The bigger thing for me with the Spider-Man movies are so much of your rogues gallery has now been done over the course of five movies. I mean, you've done the Green Goblin, you've done Hobgoblin, you've done Doc Ock, you've done Sandman, you've done Venom, you've done Lizard, you've done Electro. You know, you were going to do Mysterio and Vulture in Raimi's botched
Spider-Man 4,
and now you're going to do Vulture this time. Mysterio doesn't really fit into the quote-unquote realistic and grounded Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Well, I think he could, just by, you know, the backstory of Mysterio. He's a stuntman, a visual effects guy, and he pretty much uses those tricks to pull off heists and things. And I think you can do that because a big part of his stuff is using holograms and like smoke and mirrors and trapdoors and that kind of stuff. I think you can pull that off. And it's just the only thing about Mysterio that's going to be hard to pull off.
The fishbowl.
It's the fishbowl. That is it. Which at one point the comics went away from. They gave him like this smoky cloud thing that covered his face instead of the fishbowl. I don't know how you would do. Like, the fishbowl is kind of iconic, even though it's stupid.
I like your idea. Put Woody Harrelson in the fishbowl.
I do. I really want Woody Harrelson to be Mysterio. That's the only. I'm not the biggest Mysterio fan, but if you're going to do it, Woody Harrelson wants to be in a Marvel movie. Put him in the suit.
See, my pitch is Steve Carell.
I'm not against it, but I think Steve Carell, when he's like in that kind of role, I picture him more bumbling. And Mysterio's not really bumbling. He's like, he can be kind of mean, but he is like, he comes off as very smart and like technical and not really like, I'm bumbling into this kind of thing. I don't know who I would make Carell if I had to put him in there, but yeah, I don't think you should do Mysterio. Well, they should probably do Mysterio next, but Spider-Man's got his rogues gallery is really extensive. Granted, we've gone through like of the well-known ones, we've gone through most of those. However, I'd argue that outside of like 2.5, all of them have been done terribly. So
which 2.5?
The only good ones are the Green Goblin, Doc Ock, and actually I liked the very beginning of what they did with Harry in the third one. Well, no, actually, I'm lying. I liked everything they did with Harry in the third one until the last fight.
Until he gave himself up for his friend.
Yes. Which I didn't have a problem with that. Well, I just had a problem with everything else around that.
Well, the beautiful part about that movie for me is that, take the Venom stuff off the table, because we all know that wasn't what he wanted to do. At its core, I think Raimi visualized and conceptualized this trilogy as a story of best friends.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
And, you know, ultimately, it is the three of them, Mary Jane, Peter Parker, and Harry Osborn, that are the heart of that trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And the ending of the trilogy, the third movie, is intently about Harry finally figuring out that Parker is Spider-Man. And so my best friend killed my dad. And the toll that takes on him emotionally. Now, I don't like some of the character choices that they made. The awkward flirting between Franco and Dunst and like in the kitchen, and the subtle hints that like, once he figured out that Parker was Spider-Man, he was going to go basically sleep with Mary Jane to get back at Peter, which was kind of awkward and, like, uneasy.
Like, that whole kitchen thing is very awkward. But the payoff is that whole, the scene with him and Peter in the cafe, and while he doesn't do anything to Mary Jane, is the illusions and the way that he does it, and this is before Peter figures out that he's got his memory back, and the way Franco comes off as this smarmy asshole that just wants to mess over his friend that has clearly been his friend up until now. That's the only reason I tolerate thinking about the kitchen thing, because that is really, really, really awkward
and really creepy.
It is, but like if you don't have that part in there, that scene with him and Peter doesn't come off the same way. I completely agree with you. The whole point of these movies are those three. In particular, the third one is all about the real fall of Harry and his redemption at the very end. And if it was just about that, and you could have had Sandman in there, if just Sandman in there, I think this movie would have been fine. I don't think we're at this point where we're on our third Spider-Man and Marvel has the franchise. I think the third one would have been great.
But and then you could have moved to Vulture and Mysterio and yeah, 4. And unfortunately, Maguire at that point would have probably hemmed and hawed and gotten some more money out of Sony to come back.
Yeah, I think he would have done probably one more. And then
all of them were going to come back for one more.
The not dead ones, yeah. Even though I hated Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane.
Do not speak ill of Kirsten Dunst.
I don't have a
She has come back to life with Fargo. She's going to make her directorial debut. Virgin Suicides not only put her on the map, but it also put Sofia Coppola on the map. She was in Jumanji, which is going to get a reboot, which is totally unnecessary.
We're not doing this today. I have no problem with her. I just have a problem with her in this role. Everything else I've seen her in, I'm fine with her. As Mary Jane...
go get him, Tyre.
Like, I never thought she fit the role. And the way they wrote her as it progressed, particularly in the third one, I hated the character of Mary Jane. Because she was just whiny and needy and... just like I'm not a person
but that's to me on writers, that's to me on your story, on your script. Character development has, you know, it's not, I guess, really a strong suit.
I don't blame her for the character development at all. But I still would have never cast her in the role. I just didn't think she fit the role ever. So
we all know that, you know, the Divergent series is now dead and moving to a TV movie, but we all know Cheyenne Woodley was also cut from Amazing Spider-Man 2, and she was going to be your next generation's Mary Jane.
Yeah, I will say she was appreciative of that.
Which is interesting, because her career path to this point has been very, very, very similar to Kirsten Dunst's career at her early stages. You know, I think you can very much make equivalencies between The Spectacular Now, which was the breakout film that really put Cheyenne Woodley on the map, and Virgin Suicides, which is the breakout movie that put Kirsten Dunst on the map. They both ended up with franchise films. She ended up with Divergent. She ended up with Spider-Man. After the Divergent thing is finally over, I think she's going to go and she's going to do some other things that are going to be interesting. So she could go do her version of the Marie Antoinette thing.
Yeah.
So, like, their careers marry each other very, very similar. But, like, as far as, like, following the Harry Potter format, like, year to year, that makes sense. You could totally do it. Keep it in high school. Especially with if you bring back, we don't know yet, but, like, if you bring back the guy who from Freaks and Geeks who's writing this one.
Oh, I can't remember his name, but yeah, I know you're talking about.
You know, if you bring him back, and you don't necessarily know, it's the first time I've gotten to see John Watts, and he doesn't really strike me as the guy who's very comfortable talking to the media, but he's well-spoken, and he can do a really good job of it, but you can make decisions about bringing those guys back. Mm-hmm. But if you brought Peyton Reed back for Ant-Man and the Wasp, if this one did well enough, and it's a Spider-Man movie...
He's coming back.
Yeah. So,
I want them to do a Harry Potter format. The only thing is, with Marvel's jam-packed schedule...
That kid's gonna be dead.
Yeah, like, well, not even that. I didn't even think of that, but yeah, like, he's gonna go straight from shooting Spider-Man...
To shooting Infinity War.
Infinity War.
And then he would come back and go off and do some indie project, and then come back and do
another
Homecoming 2.
But where do you put the Spider-Man movie. Because you if you want to do Harry Potter format, it needs to be like every other year at least.
2020.
But that's 3 years from the release of this one.
17 to 20.
And if you want to keep them... Every other year kind of keeps them on track where they can do it at least junior and senior year. If you wait 3 years, you can probably pull it off. But then the third one, which is probably going to be in, what, 2022? That we're talking, 6 years? The kid's 20 now, he looks 12. He's going to eventually look like a grown man. And probably by the third one, when he's supposed to be a senior, he's going to look like... We're going to be back to the same thing where we joke about Andrew Garfield looking like an undercover cop in Amazing Spider-Man. So, they can do it, but I don't know where they'll fit the movies in unless they just film them and then put them out.
Again, we also don't know the contract status. We don't know how many films, how many obligations Holland was signed for. We don't know how the breakdown with Sony works. Like, were they promised a trilogy? Or how long does this deal stretch for? Is it out to 2020? When does the lease end? Because that's essentially what this is a lease.
Yeah.
When does that lease end? Is it just going to be like, we've got our $1 billion movie, thank you very much, we'll take it back from here?
The way they've done everything so far, particularly since Civil War has come out, it seems like before Civil War they were still working out things and they had like something clear, but it was like, you know, they both were going to be working on it. After Civil War and the reception of it, especially when it came to Comic-Con, it was like, it looked clearly like Sony's footing the bill for this, but Marvel's doing all the production. Like, Marvel
is... That's kind of what Rothman said, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that the Sony chairman came out and said it, it sounds like it's not... It's weird because we're thinking about it like it's a Marvel character that Sony owns, but Marvel's doing all the work. But that's kind of how movies are made anyway. Other production companies make movies, and then they team with a bigger production company that distributes and all this stuff. So it's the same thing here. It's just that this production company happens to own everything about the character.
You go out and you make a film like Birth of a Nation. You get the financing. You shoot the movie. You edit the movie. Then you take the movie to TIFF. Sundance.
What's Sundance?
You take it to Sundance or you take it to Sundance or a film festival like that. Yeah. You put it up for auction and distributor buys it, attains the rights, and then distributes the movie.
Yeah, so that's essentially what this is. We have no idea, but what I'd imagine is happening is that
Sony's acting as the distributor on a Marvel movie.
Well, yes,
instead of Disney, instead of Buena Vista Entertainment, this movie is being distributed by Sony.
Yeah.
Which is not all that different from after Disney purchased Marvel, they had to work out financing deals and distribution deals with Paramount First Avenger, Thor, and the Avengers movie. Because they already had
extending deals. Yeah.
So
that part is not that weird to me. I would imagine, and we're guessing here, that
until we have question time with Mr. Feige, we'll be guessing.
They set up a deal where...
So tagging him in this.
I know you were. They set up a deal where, I guess for so many years that this is the arrangement, and they just have the option to renew. And judging by the reception of Civil War, they're like, do whatever you want to do. When this movie comes out and it makes $1 billion, Sony's going to be like, we're going to renew this again for however many years and just guarantee that we have like two movies in this time frame. In which case, Marvel's going to be like, sure, and they're going to move some stuff around. So, I think
well, once there's, this movie... there's room in 2019. Because the only movie we have confirmed right now for 2019 is Avengers Infinity War Part 2 and Captain Marvel.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then I would... When is Ant-Man and the Wasp?
That's 18.
That's 18? Okay. Okay, so yeah, then that would work out. I think we'll see.
The way the schedule works, as so many times I've had to do that whiteboard, I have it memorized now. So you have, on the DC side right now, you have Suicide. This year was Batman vs. Superman and Suicide Squad. Next year is Wonder Woman and Justice League Part 1. That's 2017. 2018 is Justice League Part 2 and I think the solo Batman movie.
They still haven't announced what it is, but that's when. But they did announce that there was another unnamed DC project in 18.
And then in 19 is Cyborg in the Flash, and then I think 2020 was Green Lantern.
Aquaman's in there somewhere.
And Aquaman maybe the other 18 release.
Okay.
Justice League Part 2, Aquaman, and then the solo Batman movie. Yeah. And then 19, I know for a fact that 19 was Flash and Cyborg, and then 2020 was Green Lantern Corps. And then on the Marvel side, it's Civil War and Doctor Strange in 16, Guardians of the Galaxy, Spider-Man, Homecoming, and
Thor,
the Ragnarok. And in 2018, it's Black Panther, Avengers Infinity War Part 1, which is separated by eight weeks between Black Panther and Infinity War Part 1. And then Ant-Man and the Wasp follows Infinity War Part 1 in 2018.
Okay.
And then you have Captain Marvel in February, in March of 2019. And then
the next Avengers.
And then the next Avengers Infinity War Part 2. And you have an open space, and then three untitled dates in 2020.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So 19 would be the play. I thought there were three moves
immediately. Well, there were originally, and then they moved the schedule around. Because when they released it at the El Capitan, it was Captain Marvel, Doctor Strange. It was Civil War and Doctor Strange. So there was two in 16, three in 17, which at that time was going to be Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. At that point, was moved up from July to May.
That's right.
From July to May, and then Thor Ragnarok was going to be in July, and Black Panther was going to be in November. And then 2018 was going to be Avengers Infinity War Part 1. And then there were three in 18, which was going to be Captain Marvel, and can't think of what the other one was, but they were like, it was like, 2 and 16, 3 and 17, 3 and 18, and 3 and 19 at one point.
Was the other one Inhumans? Like
Inhumans. Humans was the last one in 2019.
Okay. All right. Okay, so that all makes sense. That all matches up. So, yeah, I think this movie's going to come out.
And Fox doesn't know what they're doing right now. They don't have anything on the books. Gambit still doesn't exist as far as anybody's concerned.
They did name two Marvel Fox projects, unnamed ones. I forget the dates, but
one of those is Deadpool 2, and the other one's probably either New Mutants or
X-Force. It's probably New Mutants. I think that one's further along. But yeah, at this point, if Fox is like, I know Deadpool's coming, I don't know what the rest of y'all. But
so, I mean, yeah. So let's move on from the House of Ideas at Marvel to DC. How are the fine folks over at DC Films with their new logo? Like, are they, like, nervous on pins and needles? Are they, like, taking David Ayer caffeine pills? What are they doing?
Oh, I think David Ayer's fine. Warner execs.
No, David Ayer's fine either way, because even if this movie tanks, he can go make another movie like Fury or End of Watch and be fine. Like, this movie isn't going to have any effect on him. Yeah, it's not going to really have any effect on Robbie. Leto, it will have some taint, too, because of the character that he's playing. And Will Smith has proven that he can make After Earth and be fine, so
this is true. Will is Teflon done. But yeah, the Warner execs, they have to be, even if they all unanimously love this movie, they have to be losing their shit right now. There's just no way around it, because it's like,
at this time next week, it will be, you know, we'll know what the Thursday and Friday numbers were, And, you know, the projections are sitting somewhere around 150 to 180 million opening weekend.
If
Guardians still holds the record for highest grossing August movie ever and highest grossing opening for August.
Well, they opened at like 90, right?
Like over 100, I thought.
Maybe. I 90 just is the first thing that came to mind. But anything over 100, Warner's is going to be happy with. But Warner's isn't in the same game as everybody else. They want the money, but it needs to be over 100. And the critics and the audience have to at least think it's like a B+ for them to have a win. They have to have good word of mouth coming out of this movie. And movie tastes are a fickle thing, man, especially when like a large contingent are like, y'all don't know what the hell y'all doing, so I'm not expecting much. And they will still come out saying, I like this, I like this, but I just don't like the movie, even though they might have actually liked it. So they're in a bad spot. The execs are in a terrible spot for the next week. They're just going to be, I don't think they'll sleep. They're probably like chain smoking out and like rocking in the corner in their office like, I don't know what's going to happen. If this goes bad, I'm going to get fired and everything else. So DC's whole state is like, I mean, the movies that are done and are in production, They kind of are what they are.
But that's the thing. There's only three. They've only done, right? Obviously, Dawn of Justice has been released. Suicide Squad is about to be released. Wonder Woman's in the can, and Justice League is now filming. So like, they haven't started filming on Justice League Part 2. They decided not to shoot those back to back. They haven't started shooting on a solo Batman movie. They haven't started shooting on Flash or Cyborg yet. They haven't even named a freaking Green Lantern. So. Yeah.
I mean, I think, yeah, everything else is pretty much on hold until this comes out. Now, I do think you'll get Aquaman still because of James Wan. There's no way on God's green earth they're not making a Batman movie. I think those two movies will come out. The rest of them?
Wan can walk away and go do a horror movie somewhere and be perfectly fine and make just as much money.
He could. I think they're into the reception game and people are receptive to Aquaman and to James Wan. So and because that one is like relatively close, I think that one will survive. I think if the Flash was closer, that one would probably survive because people have been, you know, positive about
as evidenced by the fact that he's in the post credit tag.
They said it's not a post credit tag.
Well, Air told everybody to walk out of the theater very, very, very slowly. I didn't know if it was a post-credit tag or just a very creative end-credit sequence like Ghostbusters.
There is a mid-credit tag from what I've heard, but the
cameo.
And spoilers for people, there is a cameo, and we're going to say who the cameo is. So spoilers for like the next 5 minutes. But apparently, the Flash is not in that spoiler. In that tag, he's in the movie.
The body.
Yeah, he's in the body of the movie. We don't know if he's in the body as the Flash or if he's in the body as Barry Allen, but he's in the body of the movie. So, that shows you what they think of Flash, and that shows you that they've seen what everyone else thinks of the Flash. So if that movie was closer. I mean, there's nothing to say they couldn't bump it up, but if that movie was close, I think it survived too.
Well, I've heard most from people is like, so that's DC's answer to Spider-Man, right?
I've heard that a lot too.
Because I mean, they're basically the same thing, smart-ass little kid.
At this point, why not emulate what's working? You've tried not doing it that way, and look what the hell's gotten you.
True enough. So, I mean, expectations are pretty high. I mean, $150 to $180 million opening weekend.
On one hand, I mean, I want this movie to do well. I want it to do really well. I want people to like it. I want people to like everybody that's in it. But on the other hand, if this movie comes out and does more or within the same ballpark as a Batman versus Superman, it's going to infuriate me even more. It's just like,
this is a team. How can y'all get this so right and get Batman versus Superman so wrong?
Like, this is a team of essentially nobodies. Everybody knows the Joker.
And Harley Quinn.
Most people that know comics and stuff know Harley Quinn, but the general audience, they don't know who she is. They know the Joker, and that's about it. And this movie is going to make, if it makes over 150, it's within $20 million of Batman vs. Superman, which has the two most iconic comic book characters of all time. And y'all just like screwed the pooch.
A third one. It has the Holy Trinity.
And the first on-screen appearance of Wonder Woman. Like, I don't hate the movie as much as other people. But the fact that it, like, took a whole bunch of firsts and destroyed them for me is, like, it infuriates me even more. It's how, it was right there and you just messed it all up. But I'm not going to preach on that again tonight. I've done that enough. But Suicide Squad is, I think it's going to be good. It's just, it's different. And it really may just come down to how people feel about the Joker.
So, I mean, Bat-Joker, we still don't know if that's going to be a thing in the movie. That press screenings have happened. That word has not leaked out yet about in regards to whether or not that was just a variant or if that's the thing that's actually in the movie.
Well, I think they're embargoed until Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
I just want to know now.
Well, I know there are a lot of people who want to know right now. And they're all sitting in Burbank in their offices, chain-smoking, rocking back and forth on their couches, like, praying that they don't have to give up their Malibu mansions.
I don't advocate anybody taking drugs or nothing, but there are a few of them. I'm telling you, they're sitting in their office, like, snorting stuff.
Well, the person who greenlit the Robin Hood Shared Universe idea was definitely in, not in their right state of mind when that happened. So.
Man, I wonder how quick he got fired. Whoever that person is had to get fired. There's no other way around that.
Well, it depends. I mean, is a movie studio really going to miss $1 million?
I mean, yeah. Because we sit here and we can see all this money. We see how much money they go through all the time. It's like, $1 million to them. Yeah, it's whatever. But maybe not $1 million to get somebody fired. But
if they ever made a movie.
If they ever make a movie, that means guaranteed automatically. There's like $20 million down the hole.
Name me one. Other than Little John, name me one of Robin Hood's Merry Men.
I'll take away Friar Tuck for myself. So I'm going to take away those two.
Point made.
Damn. There. I know the name of one.
Point made.
And the only reason
Do you need a Friar Tuck movie?
Hell no.
Do you need a Friar Tuck movie? Do you need a Little John movie?
I would take that before Friar Tuck. That,
like,
I can't, not, is it
like
make,
you have to do all of them and then do the Robin Hood movie.
There's look, most people,
we gotta find this guy's name and, like, give him credit for, like,
we should. This is giving us some hours to talk about stuff.
I have to give Goldberg credit for the General Mills cereal idea. I mean, like,
that is just so dumb. But
it would probably get paid. Like, Marvel is solely responsible for this. Like, if the Avengers don't work, you don't get somebody making $1 million off the Robin Hood Shared Universe model.
And I know most of those exec studios are like, this is never going to work. Because, hell, I was sitting here like, I'm scared this ain't going to work, and this is going to kill my genre. I don't think this is going to work.
I thought Spawn was bad.
I never thought it was that bad. I was just like, it just has so much potential to not work. And I know they're all sitting there like, they're really going to do this? Ha, this is never going to work. And then they saw all the money come in, and they're like, oh, money? We're going to do that. and we're going to take terrible things.
Now, to be fair, like, Universal was doing this first with the monsters. Like, the Monster Shit Universe back in the 50s, like, that was a thing.
But it was back in the 50s, right. And nobody had done it here recently. And
but, like, they started doing it again. Like, I can understand that. And like, they've got a lot of star power behind that. So, I can see that.
See, they're doing it right. And they actually have properties that have done it before, so they can do it again. It's just everybody else is like...
And apparently, they're going to add an Avenger to their lineup.
It's not Universal.
Well, no, it has Universal...
Oh, wait. It should be non-Universal. Yeah.
Lionsgate?
I think it is Lionsgate. Because Universal's Jekyll is
Russell Crowe.
Yes. So Lionsgate's Jekyll is going to be Chris Evans, or they want it to be Chris Evans.
Not like he's busy or anything.
Oh, no. Not like he had nothing else to go worry about. But it's a whole different synopsis, too. It's like this guy is... he is the descendant of the original Dr. Jekyll. And apparently, whatever he took, the original took, has become hereditary. So they all have to deal with it. And it's him trying to... He, like, suppresses it and tries to deal with it. So it's still the same Jekyll kind of thing. But it's like... I guess it'll be present day and some new twist on it being genetic and all that kind of stuff.
That would be interesting. I mean, all of these... things like this that are out in the open that are, you know, fair game because they're in, you know, public domain.
Yeah.
I mean, Jungle Book, two different Jungle Book movies, two different 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea movies, two different Asteroid movies in the summer of 1998. Like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, these things happen, but, like, I don't know, it could be cool, and, you know, I like Evans, he's a very charismatic, very charming individual, and I enjoyed his directorial effort.
I've seen that all the way through.
And I did like Snowpiercer a lot, but then again, that's another comic book adaptation. It'd be interesting to see what he could do with the character, for sure. You know, like, as far as, like, Universal's actual projects go, like, you know, I'm interested to see what Cruise is going to do with the Mummy. It's got a lot of star... Like I said, their Monster Shared Universe, you know... with Kurtzman, you know, behind it, is actually got a lot of star power. So yeah. We'll see how that turns out. So a little thing called Star Wars, Rogue One. Rumors started popping up right around the time of the Rogue One reshoots that maybe they were doing reshoots to add in young Han Solo, which doesn't really mash up when you're talking about your film ending 20 minutes before A New Hope. So, were you surprised? No Han Solo, and sadly, no Hayden Christensen.
Am I surprised? No, not by either one.
I mean, those rumors have been out there for a little while that Hayden had been training, and that he was going to have a role. And here's the problem that you run into. If you ever choose to do Force Ghost communication again, Ewan McGregor has to be Obi-Wan Kenobi. And because of George's own actions, Hayden Christensen has to be Darth Vader.
Can I say how dumb that is? We're going to go off on a little tangent on Return of the Jedi, the special edition. Okay.
The double special edition, because the original 97 special edition
that's right,
still had the original actor in there.
Yeah, that's right. I've only seen the newer one once. And that's because I just bought...
The Blu-ray edition of the special editions?
Yeah, I just bought the re-released Blu-ray. And that's the only time I've ever seen it. And I knew it was there, but I kind of forgot. And then when I saw it, I'm like... If I didn't love my TV, I'd have thrown something at it. Because it's like, why? It makes absolutely no goddamn sense.
Okay, so let me play. I love the documentary, The People versus George Lucas. Let me play the defense attorney here. Anakin Skywalker died the moment that he killed all those children. The Anakin Skywalker that fell in love with Padme Aladama, the one that looked like Hayden Christensen, died the moment in the Senate President's Chamber when he killed Mace Windu and took on the name of Darth Vader.
Objection.
Okay.
I hear that. Spiritually, Anakin died that day. But his goddamn body didn't die that day.
No, Darth Vader died the day of the Battle of Endor. Darth Vader was not a Jedi, and therefore cannot be a Force ghost.
Objection again. Darth Vader didn't die that day. Anakin died because Luke brought him back from the dark side. So
when he died, he was redeemed
Anakin. So
he should die an adult.
Yes, that Anakin that died on the Death Star should have been the Anakin that's in Return of the Jedi, and not emo Hayden Christensen. When Yoda died, granted, he's old. He always looks the same.
Yeah.
That's the Force ghost we got. When Obi-Wan died, it was
Alec Guinness. But Alec Guinness was still alive then. If you did it now, it would have to be talking to Ewan McGregor.
But that's fine, because you're doing it now. They are the same age now. Yeah,
Ewan McGregor is now the same age as Alec Guinness was when he played him the first time.
Good lord, geez. It just makes me feel so old. But at the time, we have Return of the Jedi, Alec Guinness is in it. You don't ever have to replace Alec Guinness because Ewan McGregor is the same age with him now. I love Ewan McGregor. He's the only good thing about those goddamn movies. But you don't replace him. So why do you put 16-year-old Hayden Christensen in the middle of Return of the Jedi when the old dude was there and you didn't have to touch it? Why?
Because George's rationale was that why have Jar Jar turn and wave to the camera in Attack of the Clones? Like, it's just to, like, he knew what the reaction was from the fan base and he just wanted to mess with them. Like, George's take on the whole deal has always been, these are my holy scriptures, these are my canon, this is my story that I'm telling for you to enjoy. You don't have ownership of it. I will let you do all the fan films you want. I will let you write all the EU novels you want. I won't sue you for any copyright infringement. But this all sprang from my head and is my creation. So, like, if I want to go back and I want to do the special editions and I want to destroy the negative so that no one can ever release the originals ever again unless they have a Laserdisc player, I'll do that. If I want to make Hayden Christensen the Force ghost at the end of Return of the Jedi, I can do that. If I want Hayden Christensen to walk around like Frankenstein in a Darth Vader suit, I can do that.
I get all of that. And if he wants to go back, all the things he did in all of the movies, if he wants to do that, that's fine. I would actually argue I like what he did with Empire Strikes Back, because it actually makes opening up Cloud City. I actually like that because it's like
really, something you couldn't do then.
Yeah, and it's non-invasive. It's nothing major. It just makes you feel like big city.
I feel like the same way with the celebration scene at the end of Return of the Jedi.
I just don't like the song.
I like that song. You could go to sleep to that song, man. Do 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 do.
Wait, don't the Ewoks sing at some point in that song?
No.
Okay. I don't know. I'm going to go back and
watch
it.
The flute version.
Okay. Okay, maybe
because John Williams wrote the music for it when they released the special edition in 97.
Okay, maybe I'm going to go back and I'm going to withhold judgment on that, the music part. But everything else, he wants to do it, fine. But logistically, there are three things logistically that he should have not touched because they're just not feasible. The goddamn Han shot first thing, because I hadn't seen that part since he redid it in a long time. And when I watched it, I'm like, good lord, this is terrible. It is so goddamn terrible. No, Lucas, just let Han shoot him first, because it doesn't make any sense. It looks stupid.
It enhances Han's character and makes him the rogue that he is.
Besides, nobody wanted that in the first place. It just visually, from him being such a visual person, mm-hmm. he has to look at it. He cannot not look at that and be like, cringe, because I do, and I can't do anything about it. He can, so don't do
it. I think the same way about the conversation between Han and Jabba.
And that was my second one, because it's like, there's no way, I understand what he was trying to do, and on VHS, when he first did it, it didn't look as bad. But on my big HDTV, or Blu-ray, and like, whatever resolution it is, it looks god-awful. And again, I can't do anything visually like that. He has to look at this and be like, Oh, God, that's terrible.
I can see black lines.
So just don't do it or take it out. And this goddamn Return of the Jedi thing, because it just doesn't make sense. If we hadn't seen, like, if Luke didn't take the thing off his face, okay, I can kind of buy it. But we see old Anakin, and he is Anakin, and he dies right there. There's no reason for Hayden Christensen to be in that movie. None. Absolutely none.
And now he won't be in Rogue One either.
Thank God. I don't have anything against him. He's an actor, so he needs to work. So
you know what the crazy thing is? The kid from Dawson's Creek, the kid who was Michael was the kid who was in the Mighty Ducks movies, is Charlie Max, was the other guy who was up for Hayden Christensen for Anakin Skywalker.
He'd have been much better.
So,
well, shit, anybody would have been much better. But then again, the way Lucas directed him, maybe not.
Maybe not. But like. That my justification for my thing with George Lucas has always been, and we had this conversation when we had our Star Wars podcast back in December, which you can find on the iTunes of this great podcast here. My deal was always that look, George is a filmmaker who was limited by the technology at the time. He had to do passes over with a camera in the back of a Camaro. Over a ping pong table of with Lego sets on it and C4 underneath to do the blowing up part of the ship crashing into the Death Star surface. He had to do those things. He had to use a model and blow up a model to do the Death Star explosion because he had to. He didn't have access to what he had when he made the prequels. And I am here to tell you that I promise you if he had made 4, 5, and 6 in 1998, 2002, and 2005, they would have had more CGI and looked completely different than the movies that you love.
Yep.
Because Lucas was limited by the technology of the time. And when he did the Clone Wars, he's on record as saying, I decided to do the prequels once Jurassic Park. We did the dinosaurs for Jurassic Park at ILM. And once we had that technology, I knew I had enough to do the Clone Wars, so I wanted to do the prequel trilogy. Like, Lucas wasn't worried at that point so much about story. He was worried about being able to pull off the visuals that he wanted. And he was no longer fettered by the cumbersome burden of restriction of technology. So he could do whatever he wanted. Like, if he could see it, he could dream it, and he could do it with the computers that he had. And that was the problem. And he also was at a point in his life and his career was he was running an empire, which was the Star Wars empire. Merchandise, video games, all of toys, all of that.
Oops, all
of,
yeah.
And so he's making decisions partly influenced by what's best for those entities, but also who's going to tell him no at that
exactly.
Point. Like Rick, I forget, McKellum, I think it was his name. Like that's the only dude I can think of who was going to be like, no. And even then, I don't think it was going to be a clear... Like, Kasdan had said that's why he didn't work on the prequels with George. Because, like, who was going to tell George no at that
point? Yeah, like, when he was working on the originals, he would, like... He bounced ideas off of...
Spielberg?
Off of Spielberg, Coppola, it was a bunch of people. And he would show it to his friends, and they'd be like, this is terrible. And they would tell him, no, don't do this, do some other things. By the time the prequels come around, he is the creator.
He's a billionaire.
Yeah, and no, like... He's run this empire, and, like, I want to make these movies, and this is how I want to make them. Even if he's the starts off as the most humble guy, it's like, these are the movies I want to make, and this is how I want to make them. And you finally giving me the toys I can use to do this. Nobody's going to tell him no, and he's not going to listen to anybody, because it's like, this is what I've wanted to do since I made the first one. I think the first one's terrible.
Who could look at episode one? And I'm sorry to millennials who grew up with episode one as their Star Wars. I understand that. I respect that people have love for episode one and for the prequels. I respect that. But who could have looked at four and one and said, is this the same filmmaker? Is this the same screenwriter? Is this the same storyteller? Like, somebody had to look at episode one and go, George, you I know you want to make a political movie, but nice. Maybe you need less politics and more Jedi.
Yeah.
Like, the Jedi are this enormously powerful force at this time in the history of the Republic, and yet we see two of them. We see Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. We don't see the Council actually do anything. We don't hear about Jedis all over the other parts of the world. We see them as diplomats.
And that's not what... And again, this is not all his fault, but, you know, the monster kind of got out of his control. And that's not what we thought of when we thought of Jedi. We thought of these, like,
again, spiritual warriors. Again, he created a blank slate where people like me and you could sit around tables and have discussions about Star Wars.
And that's part of the lore of Star Wars, that they had so much time between the movies.
Unlike Trek.
Yeah. Star Wars had so much time between the movies, so much time after the movies, and so many other things to come out, that it added to the lore. So, once we got to the prequels, I mean, he was already in a corner, because there's no... Like, people have so many different expectations. That's already part of the problem, but he just decided to be like, forget y'all expectations, this is what I want to do. I want to do this slow political movie with this kind of creepy relationship between this teenage girl and this...
Okay, if I remember correctly, the way they explain it in the movie, she's 13 and he's 8.
Yeah, that seems about right. And yeah, like,
and he carries that torch for her from the time he's 8 to the time he's like 16.
Yeah, and like the minute they
when they commence their adult relationship, he's like 16, 17, she's like 22, 23, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's nothing right about this. Nothing at all.
Which is why it was so fun during the marathon to sit there and watch episode 2, because it was a laugh track the entire time. Because there are just laugh out loud funny lines, like, I don't think she liked me watching her.
Oh, that is almost enticing enough for me to go watch episode 2. But I've still never seen it all the way through on a clear version that's not bootleg. And I kind of want to keep that record intact. But it's like, when he made the prequels, he did, my expectations for the prequels and what he did are so vastly different.
Well, I've given my eloquent speech about Shakespearean tragedy and his attempt to do it. That's what he wanted to do. In his head, he could process that's what he wanted to do. The execution wasn't there.
Yeah, the execution was not there at all. I mean, like, the Jedi, for example, I thought they would be like this wise sage group of spiritual warriors.
For 1,000 years, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice before the dark times, before the Empire.
And in this, I mean, they're all idiots. They really are. They most of the Council this round doesn't do anything.
Until Clone Wars.
Until Clone Wars. The only one that actually wants to do anything in the first one is Obi-Wan, and then from there on is Anakin. And they're constant attempt to stop him from doing stuff is what makes him turn on them. And the whole time, the guy that's mucking everything up is staring them in the face, and all these powerful Jedi Masters have no goddamn clue that he's got a red lightsaber heading on his thing.
Which is my problem, biggest problem with episode 2, as I didn't intend for this to become a Star Wars podcast, but my biggest problem with episode 2 is Dooku sitting there telling Obi-Wan, hey, there's this evil guy who's taking this evil Sith Lord who's taking everything down from inside the Senate. I know who he is. Join me, and together we can take him down and preserve the galaxy. And Obi-Wan's like, no, bruh. Like, we would have sensed it.
Wait. Time out. Again, this comes back to my whole, you know, foggy memory of episode 2. Did that actually happen, like you just said?
That actually happened.
What?
Yes. That actually happened.
Pisses me off more than... Like, this just adds to everything else.
That was my biggest problem with episode 2. Was, like, Dooku, who is a fallen Jedi, apparently, sits there and tells Obi-Wan, as he is chained up in his little cyber chains, hey, bruh, the guy who's doing all this, Lord Tyrannus... He's doing it from the inside, like, in the Senate. Like, Join me. I know who he is. Join me, and together we can go right now, take him out, and preserve the galaxy. And Obi-Wan's like, no, bro. Like, we're Jedi. We would have sensed if there was an evil Sith Lord in our presence. You're lying.
Okay. So I'm going to take that. I'm not going to blow up like I want to. But I'm just going to apply this to the next movie, which I have seen a couple times. Because Dooku, it's not like Dooku dies in the second one. He's there in the third one.
Only to get beheaded.
But yeah, he does. But so does Obi-Wan, like at the end of the second one, does he go to like Yoda and say, hey, this dude told me this?
Yes, that's why they are on the hunt for the Sith Lord in Return of the Jedi. Because Obi-Wan, after the Geonosis situation, Obi-Wan's looking around at everything in the Clone Wars and like how the war's being fought and everything's going down. And he's like, maybe like Dooku was right. Because like some of these things seem like, for example, the whole creation of the Clone Army, like that would have had to have been a political thing that was like funded from the inside. Maybe he was right. And so he goes and he tells Master Yoda about this thing that Dooku said. And that's why they eventually send Anakin to go keep watch on Palpatine, because they're like, maybe Palpatine is this evil Sith Lord.
So knowing that, they send the dude that, through this whole series, Yoda has been concerned about...
mentally unstable.
So you're going to send him to the dude you think is the Sith Lord to watch him. What? Why? What?
And you're supposed to be the wisest beings in the galaxy.
No, you don't... Like, there are certain things I don't ask my child to do because I know she can't do them. Because I know she'll have problems with them. Because I know her well enough to know that. From the minute Yoda laid eyes on this kid, he's like, hey, something ain't right with you. We gonna teach you, but something ain't right with you. The whole time. It's like the first words out of his mouth is, there's anger in you, and that ain't good. And I gotta watch you. Those are his first words. And he's gonna say, Anakin, you child, the one that has the anger, the one that I know has done some messed up stuff, the dude that I've been watching since you were 8, that I said was too old to be in this, all these things I had, all these trepidations I had about you, I'm going to send you to watch the dude that might be the Sith Lord. Because mind you, he's already like turned a couple Jedi to the Sith, but we're going to send you because I don't think, maybe I don't think he really is, but I just need to cover my bases. No! You send Anakin the furthest away from any of that stuff because he's the one you don't want turned.
And George's rationale for that was that Anakin and Palpatine had a pre-existing relationship from the time that he was 8.
Even more reason you don't send him over there. Because that means he's going to talk to him. Because he's like, oh, I remember you when you were 8. Come here, let me talk to you. And if he's the Sith Lord, he knew the minute, again, he knew the minute he laid eyes on him. Was like, there's anger in you. I can take that, and I can do stuff with it.
We will be watching your career with great interest, young Skywalker.
So, all in all, this whole conversation has made me realize Yoda's dumb as a bag of bricks. The whole Jedi Council is worthless.
Except for, including Mace Windu, who didn't wait for backup.
And now I don't feel bad that every last one of them died by getting shot in the back. Jedi powers be damned. Shot in the back.
Yeah, couldn't see that coming. At all.
Except for Yoda, the guy that had the bright idea to send Anakin to babysit Palpatine. Yeah. Do something else. Now I'm going to have to go back and watch 2. I hate you for this. I'm going to have to go back and watch the second one. Just so I can properly gauge everything and then really get pissed off.
Thank you, George Lucas.
I did not come here thinking of talking about Star Wars. And now, I'm going to leave here mad.
Well, Emo Vader, as you call him, is not in Rogue One. So you can rest assured that Hayden Christensen is not in that suit when you go to theaters next December.
Oh, boy.
All right. So let's move on to something that is not Star Wars while your blood pressure gets reduced. So, Hollywood has a representation problem, right? Like, they have a diversity problem that... You know, the Academy's having to, like, turn over 90% of its membership to kind of appease people.
You know, you turn over 90% of your membership, it might be just, a little small problem. Just a little bit.
Yeah, hashtag Oscar's so white. You know, people complaining about Marvel not having a female lead until last week. Well, we now live in a world where any intellectual property is a potential franchise. We here on this podcast talked a couple of weeks ago about the idea that with the BFG coming out, you know, it's been about 20 years since we've done Jane's and the Giant Peach. Mm-hmm. We already redid Willy Wonka. And the technology is there to do a Jane's and the Giant Peach movie that doesn't look creepy. So, like, we keep waiting for, like, the Dole Legacy project to give the okay to make Jane's and the Giant Peach again. So any IP, as we've seen with Ghostbusters and Sony, is a viable IP that you want to keep alive because, you know, you need money. So Disney, the House of Mouse, doesn't really need money. But they have a property in The Rocketeer, which is based off a comic book, which has a movie that, while it was not a huge success box office-wise in 1992, is now a huge cult classic. Timothy Dalton is in it, I believe.
Yes, he is.
And, you know, so is Alan Rickman. Alan Arkin. You know, and it's a very good comic book movie. It's light, it's fun, it fits very much in the tone of what Disney was doing at the time with the Young Indiana Jones series.
That's right, yeah.
It's a period piece. It has a lot of good elements to it. And so the way that movie ends is basically like the Rocketeer is now a thing known by the newspapers, and they don't know who there's. It isn't a Tony Stark deal where, like, they know who he is. They just know that the Rocketeer exists and that he helped take down the Nazis. So word broke this week that, you know, Disney's quietly developing a sequel to the Rocketeer that would also function as a reboot with a young African-American female lead in the suit, because the old white guy who was in the suit the first time has been kidnapped and is gone. And a version of jetpack technology that the Rocketeer uses is now on the market and is being, and there are some communists from Russia who are, you know, itching to get that technology so that they can help propel the Cold War into their favor. What are your thoughts on a Rocketeer sequel, a African-American female protagonist, which at the time period we're talking about is like 1941, 1942, which would be, or 1952, which, you know, a young black female in, you know, the height of the Cold War would be an interesting thing.
Yeah.
And just your thoughts on this whole project. I mean, I'm sure Dalton died in the movie, but Alan Arkin's character was still around.
Yep.
I believe that the guy who played him originally, the Rocketeer originally, is still alive.
Yeah, that's
John Boy Walton?
No, it's not Connelly. Jennifer Connelly's in the movie.
She's still alive.
She's still alive. It's Campbell, I want to say. Because you said it, because you asked, I forgot his name, but I know who he is. So I love The Rocketeer. Like, I absolutely love the original movie.
Joe Johnston, why not?
Yeah, that's why I was excited about the first Captain America, because he did
he did
Rocketeer, did this period piece, and it came off really well.
In 1992 than anybody would have expected.
Yeah, I mean, the only problems with The Rocketeer right now is that the technology is dated, you can tell. But if you can get past that, it's still an enjoyable movie right now. So I'm all for it. I've wanted a sequel to The Rocketeer for years.
Especially in this comic book climate.
Yeah, like it's, I mean, the comic didn't debut until the 80s, so it's a fairly new one. It was really new when they made the movie. So it is a comic book property, but it's not as well known. It's more well known for the movie than it is for the comics. So it fits into that niche, but it's something new. And the fact that they're going to go with an African-American, a young female African-American lead, is very interesting. Because for mostly because of the time period they're in. If you're talking in the 50s, you're talking right in the middle of like civil rights movement, all that kind of stuff. So
you're also talking about being in the middle of McCarthyism.
Yeah. So how does not only her adventures dealing with the communists trying to steal a rocket, but just the political climate and that she's going to be in. I'm assuming they're still going to be in L.A.
And if anybody ever found out
that it is an African-American woman, how would they react to that? So all of those different, you're adding different those new different dynamics and to the Rocketeer.
And who kidnapped the original guy.
Yeah, which...
Or is he just missing?
They said missing. I would assume it's like kidnapped or like gone somewhere. But because the name of this movie is going to be Rocketeers, I'm assuming somewhere along the line we actually get him back in the suit. I don't know if how they're going to do that, because this movie is like, I think it's supposed to take place
6 years.
6 years after the original. And it's been way more than 6 years.
1992, 2016. That's 24 years.
Yeah. I'm sure he's still a good looking guy, but he's gonna look like somebody's. If you're going a young African American woman, he'll look like her grandfather's age, kind of like Alan Arkin looked to him in the original movie. So I don't know if they'll recast or what they're gonna do. I would assume they would.
But, I assume they wouldn't. I think the. Then you would keep that.
Keep him that old?
Oh, you could digital. You've seen what they did with. They can de-age and all that kind of stuff now. Depending on how big of a role. And again, people are running with this like it's the greatest. Like it's the biggest news in the history of civilization. Like, this is in script development stage. This isn't like I'm going to go shoot this film tomorrow.
Yeah.
Alan Arkin has to clear his schedule or anything.
Yeah, doing the 50s is interesting. Maybe they'll bump it up to the 60s, because you can still keep the communist element and it will just make the other two actors age appropriate and not have to recast. I'm interested to see what his name is, because it's killing me. Billy Campbell. I knew I was right. And if this is how he looks now, yeah. So you just cut that beard off and he looks like he did 24 years ago, which means I officially don't like him. because that's just not fair. That is just not fair.
George Lucas making Star Wars.
He was already with Jennifer Connelly for years because of the Rocketeer, and now he still looks the same way. You, sir, are not fair. I don't like you. But I'm all over this movie, and I can't wait for it to happen. Hopefully it happens sooner rather than later.
Indeed. So there's this movie coming out in February/March 2017. It's set in ancient China and revolves around the building of a Great Wall. And yet somehow Matt Damon is the central figure. What did you think of the Great Wall trailer, which dropped this week?
So, the premise is interesting because it seems the Great Wall is built to keep monsters out. That is an interesting concept. However, as you know, the Great Wall is in China. That's, you know, it's in the name.
Media market.
Yeah, Great Wall of China. So, in this trailer, there are a lot of Asian people, which is to be expected. There is a Hispanic person, which I'm still trying to figure out that one. But the person we spend the most time with in this trailer,
and the lead of the movie,
is Jason Bourne himself, Matt Damon. So,
dying on arrival.
Why? In this climate of, we just talked about, you know, Hollywood's race issue a little bit. And in this climate of movies casting white leads when they're set in, like, Egypt. Yeah, the whitewashing thing. Why would you Last Samurai this and make Matt Damon the lead of this Great Wall of China movie? Like, I mean, because they're monsters, I would assume that there might be some magic involved. And as bad as stereotypes are, if it was a stereotype of another culture that used magic that showed up in this, be like, okay, that's still kind of messed up, but I see what you're doing. White people don't inherently have this whole stigma of having magical abilities. Actually, the Chinese people do. So you don't need anybody else. So why is Matt Damon the lead in this goddamn movie?
Because some executive decided so.
That executive is going to get fired.
Well, they're putting it in a very crowded space, so...
Yeah, they want it to die. It's January, right?
No, it's February or March. It's like in the middle of that huge run of like... February of 17 and March of 17 are like jam-packed like every weekend. Like it's February 17th is the release day, I think, for Great Wall.
These, like...
And it comes out of the same day as Dark Tower.
Yeah, see, these movie execs need to go ahead and, like, right around this time of year, they should just go ahead and start looking at the calendar for next year and be like, what the hell was I thinking? No, you cannot stay on this date because I'm looking at this. I've never read the Dark Tower, but I know a lot of people like it. And I know the backlash this movie's going to get, unless there's some awesome trailer that just knocks everybody out their socks, but this movie is destined to die between the Dark Tower and people's reception of it. So it might want to move along with some other movies in this crowded space.
Wolverine 3.
I think everybody was like, oh, Batman vs. Superman stuck their movie in March and nothing was around it. Let's do that.
Actually, I think the lesson that was learned was Fast and the Furious 7, which was in the first week of April and didn't have anything to run to compete with until Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Yeah, that is a good example. So, as Hollywood often does, they're copycat. They're like, oh, we're gonna do that. But if you
Lego
all Batman, do it,
Lego movie opened on Valentine's Day and ran forever.
Yeah, but animated is like a little different. It's like if they're good, they people just wins. Yeah, they just keep going. So. It's not so weird to see Lego movie in February, but like these kind of movies is like, why what made y'all do that? But Fast 7, even though it's not as successful as some people think, Batman vs Superman, Deadpool,
still gonna be the fourth highest grossing movie of the year.
Yeah, so the proof is there that you can do it. But if you all do it, nobody wins.
Yeah, like Kong Skull Island, Dark Tower, Great Wall, Wolverine 3, Lego Batman, 50 Shades of Grey sequel, like all within like 3 weeks of each other.
And in that list you said, you can tell there are going to be clear winners. Dark Tower is probably going to be a clear winner.
And that's right up, that's head-to-head with the Great Wall.
Yeah, so Dark Tower is going to win. Lego Batman's gonna win. There was another one. What was the first?
Kong Skull Island. And Wolverine 3 head to head.
Kong Skull Island is gonna win because Fox is not treading so hot with Wolverine movies. Maybe the last Hugh Jackman movie will bump it up, but I would still move. So, all that to say, a lot of movie studios need to be like, reevaluate things. And this movie in particular.
My problem is. Look, I get it, man. Like, January, February, and March, hard times in the Northeast, snow, harder to get to theaters, yada yada. I get it. But, like, Chronicle, Fast 7, like, we have examples of you put quality movies in January, February, and March, people will go. But who on God's green earth staked out that, like, September to Thanksgiving had to be award season? And, like, we couldn't actually put anything good or quality out during that period of time. We just saw a couple years ago with John Wick. If you put John Wick, The Equalizer,
yeah,
with Denzel, like, if you put things of quality in genre terms, genre movies of quality in September, October, you can make money there, too. Gambit was supposed to be an October release. Like, you don't have to be, like, August. August is still fairly clear. I mean, look at what Suicide Squad's getting ready to do. Look what Guardians did a couple of years ago. Yeah. Look what TMNT did a couple of years ago with Guardians. I mean, okay, I get it. You don't want to end up in the, I get that you don't want to end up in the nice guy's position of just being a really good movie, but being in a crowded summer where you just get over, where you don't even have a chance to breathe in the news cycle before you're overtaken by something else. I get it. May and June and July are increasingly more and more crowded. So take advantage of February, of August. And if more studios are piling their stuff into February and March, then go to September. Go to October and state your territory there. You know, over the last few years, we've seen more and more. Yes, Christmas Day has always been a big thing, but over the last 5 years, Thanksgiving weekend has become a bigger deal. With Thor opened up in November, the Dark World opened up in November. The Hunger Games, Catching Fire, Mockingjay, and Mockingjay Part 2 all opened on Thanksgiving weekend. Doctor Strange this particular year is opening up right around Thanksgiving. Justice League Part 1 is scheduled to be a Thanksgiving release for 2017. So if you can take advantage of the Thanksgiving and Christmas weekends, why can't you take advantage of September and October? Why does it just have to be Sully? Why does it just have to be Birth of a Nation? Why does it just have to be, you know, the Founder? Why does it just have to be The Revenant? Why does it just have to be The Hateful Eight that, like, permeate this awards culture? Why does it just have to be those films that are dedicated to that season? And vice versa. Why can't you put something like Moonrise Kingdom in May and have it like it did and still have the legs to carry through? Grand Budapest Hotel opened in March, had the legs to get to Oscar season in March, the following March. So, like, don't lock yourself into a calendar where, like, thou shalt honor the Oscar season. Like, you need to make money. I guarantee you a good genre movie, which has broad four-quadrant appeal, like Kong Skull Island, is gonna make more money in October than Sully.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, just that's the way it is. So, like, stop holding certain seasons as holier than thou. Like, get over the preconceived notion that January, February, and March are dumping grounds. Get over the preconceived notion that October, November, and December are awards season. Like, get over the idea that kids go back to school and so no one has any money in September and in August and September. Like, challenge, get the stereotypes and the preconceived notions out of your head and open up the full calendar so that we don't end up in this situation where we have 8 movies over 4 weeks.
Yeah, nobody takes advantage of Labor Day, right?
No.
Yeah, like, hit every holiday. Like,
The Equalizer was a Labor Day weekend movie.
Yeah.
It was the thing that finally knocked Guardians out of the top, Guardians and TMNT out of the top spot. Wick 2 was a Halloween, around Halloween.
Yeah, people go back to school and things, but they want that, like, last release. It's a 3-day weekend. Give them a movie there that people are going to go see, and you'll make money there. So,
why not? I mean, like, college football weekend kicks off, and, like, the Jerry Lewis Teflon's not a thing anymore, so, like...
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
So, like, why not? Why can you only release horror movies on Halloween weekend? Why can't you release, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 on Halloween weekend?
Yeah.
You know, you're a brand, you have name recognition, it doesn't matter what time of year you release.
It really doesn't. And I'm really like, somebody needs to get on Labor Day. Because, yeah, college football starts that weekend.
In the South.
and it's really big in the South, not really everywhere else. But it's a 3-day weekend, and NFL
4-day weekend.
Well, yeah, that's right. And the NFL hadn't started yet. I wouldn't open anything big on the first weekend of the NFL, but the NFL hadn't started yet. So people that want college football, they'll still get it. But everybody else will just go to the movies. It's not that hard, man. Just do it.
Not that hard. Alrighty. Well, that about do it for this week's podcast. Couple quick hit notes. Ghostbusters reboot, still not doing well. nowhere close to making their money back and taking a huge public relations hit. So Paul Feig's still probably somewhere in a bar trying to figure out what he's going to do next. Which is a shame because I like the movie. I like the movie a lot, actually, for what it is.
Yeah.
The Jason Bourne movies, the Jason Bourne reteaming of Damon and Greengrass that was going to take this thing back to prominence. Going to win the weekend with about $45, $50 million, but probably will not have the legs to stretch out after Suicide Squad opens on next Thursday.
Yeah, I saw one review call it Jason Boring. I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know any validity to that. But
yeah, it's from all I've heard from friends that they fell asleep in the third act. Like, yeah. Which is again, like I was telling you earlier, amazing to me that like Greengrass and Damon, like, waited to make this movie, and were like very particular about the story. And it seems to me we're in a Kingdom of the Crystal Skull situation where like. They eventually just relented and the story wasn't right.
Well, I'm not big into Bourne, so I can't really say one way or another.
Well, again, it's been since 2006. Like, 2006, 2008. And the problem with that franchise is the same problem with 24, which there was a 24 panel at Comic-Con where they kind of hinted that, like, oh, by the way, yeah, Jack Bauer is still in Russian prison, but we might actually see him. So... Like, that made me happy. But, like, how do you make the Jack Bauer character... What you just did on Lucas, I could do on, like, on Jack Bauer and like, where the franchise went after season four, which was the high point, and how they didn't get their game together after the writer's strike, and how they just...
Yeah.
And how they basically veered more into the nihilistic... fatalistic, like, I'm a messed up human being, I have no family, I have no reason to live, I'm just going to do crazy stupid stuff because I'm smart, because I'm right, and because if I die, what does it matter? And that painting Jack Bauer almost as a superhero, you know, to the point where in the last televised season before Live Another Day, he literally dresses up like Iron Man and goes and attacks a presidential convoy to go get, Gregory Eisen, Logan, President Logan. Like, he literally dressed up like Iron Man. Like, the original, the first generation Tony Stark that he, in the cave, like, yeah. That's what he does. Like, they made him in, like, they just did wrong. They took the wrong tack with that character after season four. And, like, the problem with Jack Bauer and with 24 was, A, how do you continue? There are only so many ways you can threaten the world. B, how does that character survive in an instance where we're so far removed now from 9/11? Like, Bourne and Bauer were creations of a post-9/11 world. Mm-hmm. They were relevant in a post-9/11 world. We're 15 years removed now from 9/11. Like, the towers, like, they've rebuilt on the property. Like, it's no longer a foundational hole in the middle of Manhattan. It is now back to being a visitor center, a Freedom Tower, and all of this. Like, we're 15 years removed from 9/11. The world is a vastly different place now than it was in 2001. Like, can those characters still be relevant? And the Jack Ryan issue. Jack Ryan is a product of the Cold War. How do you keep that character relevant after the Cold War is over? So, I mean, that's why I wasn't really keen on the Bourne series. I wasn't really keen on Bourne coming back, on Damon coming back. Like... To me, it was a franchise that should have died with the last installment is a perfect time for that franchise to have its lifespan in.
You've seen more of them than I have, so I will agree.
Okay, so our next podcast, would you like to tell the fine folks what we're going to be doing?
Well, there's a movie that comes out this week, so that means we're going to go see it. So we're going to be talking about Suicide Squad and all the, hopefully, goodness that comes from it.
The bright, 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 bright color palette.
Yeah, it really is bright.
So, if you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter at BCW Tiger Fan.
And at The Mets Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.